morning, Mark. How are you?
Not too bad. It's nice and early for you.
I know. I'm just trying to get my brain cells in order here.
I know how that feels.
Very early.
Yeah. It's something something like, what, 5:30 where you are, I think.
It is 5:30 a.m. I set my alarm to get up to do this, yes. I think actually I'm going to go back to sleep after we're done.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, I'll try not to keep you too long then.
Okay.
You must be pretty busy at the minute with a sort of comeback rock album. Why 2016? Why did you sort of want to get back into the heavier stuff at this stage?
Well, that's the question everybody's been asking me. Well, I took a big break, and that was for motherhood. You know, my children were born in 2004 and 2006, so I've been really busy the last few years. Just raising my kids, because it's an intensive job. Intensive. It takes a lot of creative energy. And I always knew I would make another rock record. I just wasn't quite sure when. But in the last couple of years, sort of time and space has opened up a bit. And I was able to complete the writing of a bunch of material and sort of strategically planned it in a way that I could go into the recording studio for just like little blocks of time here and there to finish the album and put it together. So that's why the album was actually fully completed, mixed and everything in the summer of 2015. But once I had it in my hands, there was sort of this question of, okay, now what am I going to do? Am I going to just sort of throw it out there independently, or am I going to search for distribution? So, I had been speaking with a very good colleague of mine from Montreal who's in the industry, and he said, oh, you know, Lee, he said, you know, what I picture for you, my ideal scenario, if I was managing your career, he's not, of course, but he said, would be to for you to have your own label again and to form that and then search a distribution deal with one of the best distributors in the world, so it would be in every channel so that people could have access to it. And so that's what I ended up doing in the end, is shopping around for distribution, and ended up obviously with Caroline International, which is part of the Universal Network, which is, of course, you can't hope for better than that, really. So
yeah, I mean, they do a lot of stuff over here. It's hard, I guess, these days to know what the best step is, really, when you're releasing new material. There's so much stuff out there, and it's hard to know what's going to do the best job for you. You mentioned that the album was ready to go last summer. What was the writing process like? Are there any older songs on there, or was everything pretty much written for this record?
There's only one song that I pulled forward to put onto this album, and that's a song called Bad Boyfriend. It is something I wrote about 5 years ago, and I had been playing it in my live show. And all the other material is brand new, written within a year or so of starting to record the album. So in terms of the process for writing, what was a little bit different this time is, in the past, I've always had a co-writer. I worked for quite a few years with a gentleman named John Albaney, who was my guitar player for, 12 years or so. We spent about 11 years as a co-writing team. But I wrote a lot of songs for this album on my own. And then I wrote 5 tunes for this album with a guitar player from Toronto named Sean Kelly. I don't know if you're familiar with who he is, but he played for quite a few years with Nelly Furtado and had his own solo project called Crash Kelly. Very gifted guy. He and I met because he wrote a Canadian, sort of a Canadian history book on Canadian rock and roll called Metal on Ice about 3 years ago. And I contributed to that book by way of an interview, and him and I became fast friends and just started bouncing around the idea of me writing another rock record. I told him I was interested in doing that. So it was a little bit different. He and I collaborated long distance, actually, on 5 songs, and I wrote 6 of them on my own.
So the new technology then was pretty useful for you in that process? So through your trading files over the net and things like that?
Well, in terms of demoing, yes. We some of the songs, like a couple of the songs that we wrote, he sent me completed track ideas that he had, you know, demoed up in his garage band. And I took them, pulled them and put them in my studio and just wrote a vocal top line and lyrics on top and completed the song that way. However, some of the songs that we wrote together were as basic as him sitting down with his acoustic guitar and recording an iPhone memo and texting it to me. So some of those ideas were me receiving an iPhone memo text of just a riff or a riff in another part. And then I would take it down into my studio downstairs and complete the idea, like re-record it in my studio and complete the idea down there and then send it back to him and say, okay, this is what I've got so far. What further ideas do you have to contribute? So we bounced a couple of ideas back and forth like that. So yeah, honestly, my best friend on this whole recording project was my iPhone memo feature, because in the past, I've had lots of great ideas, but if I don't have a pad and a piece of paper right there to put them down or some kind of recording device, I've forgotten them. So, it was just great because, I mean, you always have your phone. So I would go, oh my gosh, I've got this great idea. I would pull the car over actually and go and, you know, sing it into the little iPhone mic and put it down so that it didn't magically evaporate into the cosmos somewhere. Right.
That's so cool. I mean, it's amazing what you can do these days with technology. The album itself's got an interesting title, Fire and Gasoline. I'm guessing that did that just come from the song, or was that how you feel about these set of songs?
Well, truth be known, I didn't come up with the title. I came up with the title for the song. Obviously, I wrote the song, but we were really, to be honest with you, struggling over a title, something that we felt said rock and roll. And it also sort of encompassed what we felt the energy of the album was, or the sort of tone of the album. And one of the A&R guy, Tom Tremuth at ILS Records, who signed me to the label, we were talking one day, and he said, I think Fire and Gasoline is a great title. He said, even if you're not, if you don't speak English that well, because the album was coming out worldwide, and his feeling was, even if you don't speak English, Fire and Gasoline says rock and roll to somebody who's from Germany or from Sweden. And I thought, oh, yeah, I guess I probably would agree with that. And because the nature of the whole album is, you know, I write a lot about the human condition, about the complicated nature of relationships and things like that. He felt that fire and gasoline are two combustible substances, so that it was appropriate. So that's why we went with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great title, and like you say, it sort of tells people what it's all about. I think live, just taking it all the way back, and I'm not sure of this, and I've always wanted to ask you if it's true or if I was just dreaming it. I think the first time I saw you was back in 1985 supporting Hawkwind. In the UK. Now that's a pairing. Now that's a hell of a pairing.
You know, even back then, I thought that was an odd bill. But you're unfortunately not always in charge of exactly who you play with. Sometimes they'll examine, you know, a tour going through, and an agent will think it's a good pairing and just put you together. But yeah, I did tour with Hawkwind, and all I remember mostly about that tour is the fact that they had a backdrop and they had this sort of light show with all these psychedelics going on at all times. But it was groovy. It was cool.
And the bass was really loud. Yes.
Really loud.
The bass was. I remember standing outside.
Yes, I remember that too. All I can say is I do feel really blessed for all of the acts that I've been able to tour with over the years. I've toured with quite a few, and it's been a learning experience, right? It's anytime you're opening up for somebody, to be able to see more seasoned players do their thing and pull their show together. It's definitely a gift, right? To be able to learn from that.
Definitely, and you've played with some great names. I mean, Iron Maiden, I think you did a tour with as well in the UK a year later, and then there was the big Reading Festival in 87 with Status Quo, Georgia Satellites, and Magnum and people like that. It must have been a hell of a time, and you seem to be over in the UK quite a lot in Europe touring back then.
Well, the irony of the whole situation for me was that I was much more successful in Europe initially than I was in my own country. It's so funny how that works, where you're not able to get arrested where you live, but people think you're, you know, a goddess elsewhere. So, those were some fun times for me. I didn't really, truly experience any kind of real success, success, mainstream success, till 1989 in Canada. Mm. It was on the Body Rock album here, which really cemented me as a sort of legitimate artist here. It was the one where I actually charted. I had the most radio play. I had an album that went almost triple platinum here. But it was interesting because prior to that, you know, on my second, third, fourth, and album, I had quite a career going on in Europe, in the UK. So those were interesting times for me. I was very, you know, I was young, really young, and I was very impressionable. So for me to be like a young girl in my early 20s and to be touring Europe with, say, like I toured Europe with Bon Jovi in 1985, this stuff was mind-blowing for me. It was pretty amazing.
So, taking it all the way back to today, then, before we get on to the new album, what are your touring plans at the moment? Are we likely to see you out in Canada and the States?
Well, right now we're putting together a string of festival shows for the summer here in Canada. The timing of this album was a little bit awkward because it came out at the end of March, beginning of April. So a lot of the major festivals overseas have already been booked. But that does set me up nicely for 2017. Mm. So at this point in time, we're concentrating on Canada first because this is my home country. So that's first on the agenda. But we're definitely looking to certainly the spring and summer of 2017 to be putting dates together to come over there. And more than anything, I'd love to get over there and do a couple of nice anchor dates in the UK. And then build on that. It's very expensive, as you know, for bands from Canada and the States to come over there. So what is always great is if you've got an anchor date or two, like a festival date that pays well to sort of finance getting you there, then it's easy to tag dates onto that. So that would be sort of the strategy at this point in time. And also sort of gauging what the response to the album is now. So far, it's been quite positive.
Yeah, no, I've seen some great reviews, and we certainly loved it. I think the festivals over there have got it right as well at the minute, because they are playing rock from various different areas, various different genres. It seems to be a good mix at the festivals over in the Europe at the moment. For someone picking up your new album who's probably only heard, let's say, Body Rock and Metal Queen, where would you suggest they start?
What do you mean suggesting they start in terms of
which song do you think's gonna appeal most to I guess your old school fans who are getting back into Lee Aaron again?
That's a hard question, because I think my real diehard fans that have sort of stuck with me over the years and have appreciated all of the things that I've done, I think they're going to be able to appreciate it in its entirety as just a straight up rock album. You know, I've been the type of artist that has taken a few interesting diversions throughout my career, and also recreated myself a few times. I wouldn't say that Fire and Gasoline is a complete recreation, but I would say that You know, what one comment that has been made to me a few times already throughout the course of interviews is that people have said that it's definitely a cohesive rock record because of my voice and the same band, obviously, that we all played together in the same room, off the same, you know, up live off the same floor, gives it a cohesive sound. But it tends to encompass, I think, like you can hear twinges of all of my influences throughout the course of the album. I mean, a good song to start with, I think, would be Fire and Gasoline itself.
It's a great song. I mean, I love the variety on there. That's one of the things that's most appealing to me. I mean, you've got like a really cool pop influence that I think comes across really well. There's a great sort of AOR twist to songs like Bittersweet, I guess, and then one of my favourites, Popular, is really, really cool. I really like that song.
That's interesting that you say that. Because everybody seems to have a different favourite, but you're the only person so far who's picked Popular. And I was driving yesterday, and I heard, gosh, what was it? Won't Get Fooled Again by The Who, Okay. Because that's we were pulling heavily from that influence, because my bass player and drummer love The Who and are influenced by that, and I think you can really hear that on Popular.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it must have been cool to film the video for Tomboy. That's a really cool, fun video out there with your daughter on.
Oh, yeah, that was amazing. Well, because half of my band is from Toronto and half of my band is from Vancouver, that we had a little bit of a logistical issue with pulling everybody together for that video and the timing frame in which the director could do it. So I had to come up with an alternate plan. And, you know, I was just out for a nice evening walk one night with my dogs and my family, and it just occurred to me, well, wow, what about the idea of actually pulling together a band comprised of actual tomboys, of, you know, because the song was written for my daughter, my 10-year-old daughter. And so my daughter goes to a fine arts school. And so finding like three or four of her little girlfriends to be part of the video wasn't difficult. I just sort of put it out there, and the response from her friends was overwhelming. The thing, I guess, because, you know, I wrote the song as a song of empowerment, as a song that would be a positive message for young girls. The girls, it so resonated with them. So they all came to the rehearsal. They knew the song by the back of their hand, and then we put instruments in their hands and said, okay, you guys are going to learn to fake instruments now. And they totally rose to the occasion. I mean, they picked it up in a matter of a couple hours, and, you know, they were just fabulous. So it was a whole lot of fun to film.
Yeah, they did a great job. And the album itself, as I said, has got a bit of something for everyone on there. What would you like people to take away from the album after listening to it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was, I'll tell you what I'd like them to take away is that, you know, you can be young at heart forever. I was talking to a friend of mine recently, and she was telling me how she had gone to see, I believe it was Yes, in concert.
Wow.
And she said, you know, I was looking around and I'm looking up at stage, and I, you know, because they're a whole generation ahead of where she is.
Yeah.
She said, I was looking up at stage and going, man, I was a little bit shocked because I was looking at these guys going, they kind of look old to me. And she said, then I started looking around the audience and I was looking around the audience going, well, all these people look kind of old to me. Then she said, and then I realized this is me. And because she said, the thing is, I'm still 25 in my head.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I started laughing and I said, well, yeah, me too. You know, like we all are, you know? And so I think we all feel that way. you know, as we, you know, become more mature adults and, you know, enter into our 30s and our 40s and 50s and we have kids and families and, but, you know, in our hearts, we're all still 25. Yeah. And that's kind of the mental space I think I was at when I wrote the whole album, Fire and Gasoline. It's that, you know, this embodies the spirit of who I am in my heart. And I think who most of my fans are. So, you know, you're only young once, but gosh darn it, you can be immature forever.
I think that's a really great way to sum it up. I mean, I've played the album to older people. I've played the album to like younger nieces and nephews and things like that. And the young crowd are really gone for it. So I think you've actually really hit on something there.
That's really nice. Go ahead.
Say something that everyone can love.
Well, thank you. I'm impressed you've played it to so many people. Most people that I often talk to, interviewers, and they've barely listened to a few tracks on the album.
No, I always like to give it a good listen. I always like to get a second opinion as well, especially with songs like Popular. That was it was a bit of a hit in our house, so it's great stuff. Just taking it all the way back for you. What was your original inspiration to get into music? What started it all off for you?
Well, my original inspiration was the fact that my mother used to sing around the house all the time when I was a kid. My mother traditionally has sang in church choirs my whole life. And so from the time I was literally a baby, she sang to us around the house, sang to us to go to sleep. And so I was always sort of hearing someone creating music in my house, that being my mom. My father, conversely, can't sing his way out of a paper bag. But so just the idea of singing just seemed like, well, this is what people do in my home. So it was like a natural natural thing for me. And I entered into singing in even just school productions of musical theater things from the time I was about five on. And then later, I was in musical theater, so I was singing a bunch of sort of jazz and blues and Broadway standards up until my early teens. And then my father and mother both worked for a college when I was growing up, Humber College in Toronto. One day my father came home with a trunk full of albums, and what had happened is that the college radio station was changing formats, and they were getting rid of their cassette collection or whatever it was, and they were getting rid of their vinyl collection, that's what I meant to say, and they were going to a new format, which I believe at the time was cassette, and he came home with this trunk full of albums, and in that trunk full of albums, I discovered the Dreamboat Annie, Heart,
wow.
One of the first Runaways records, Elton John, Fleetwood Mac, David Bowie, Steely Dan, Led Zeppelin. There was about three or four Led Zeppelin albums, the first three or four albums in there, and this was my introduction to rock and roll. Because up until that point, mostly I was hearing Anne Murray records around my house because my mother loved Anne Murray. And I was just like blown away, especially the Zeppelin. Oh, mm. And Joplin, Pearl. I remember Joplin, yeah. Pearl was in that pile. And just being blown away by this music I'd never heard before. And that just sort of set me on a course for, just loving rock and roll. Getting into it, but with that said, it wasn't metal. It was more, the hip rock of the day.
Mm-hmm. So it's a great way to start out, I guess. And that I guess a question I had for you as well was that another one of the songs I love, Heart Fix, seems to maybe intentionally channel Heart, the band.
Yeah, someone else said that to me too. I wasn't thinking that at the time when I wrote it. I mean, it has the word heart in the title, obviously. But no, that was just believe it or not, the two or three, a couple of weeks before my guitar player was flying in from Toronto for pre-production, I was looking at the material and went, you know, I actually think I really need another song. So I sat down and wrote Heart Fix in a weekend. It would make sense that a band like Heart would come out in the influences of my writing, absolutely. So it's interesting that that's your observation.
Yeah,
it wasn't intentional.
I've always loved Ann Wilson's voice, and I do think this is your best vocal on the album. It's a wonderful song, and it really has that sort of smoky, sort of bluesy, sort of ballady flavor to it. It's great. Love it.
Thank you. One of the gentlemen that I've worked with on this album, who was one of the engineers, I was very, very blessed to be able to get him on board. He's a great vocal producer, and that's John Webster. Mm. So when the album tracks were finished, I had the opportunity to connect with John and work on vocals. And I was absolutely, it was like it was like winning the lottery. A friend of mine suggested him, and he was connected to John, and I said, well, call John and see if he'd be interested in working on the balance of my album with me, engineering, because he's a great vocal engineer. And so I was very happy, because I think in the end, between John and myself, we got, you know, my vocal sounds, I think, the most pure to what I really sound like on this album, like when you're just standing in a room, yeah. Like in terms of being unaffected by you know, bizarre reverbs, or you know, he just knew the right microphones to use to get a real pure tone. And so yeah, I was really, really happy to be able to work with him.
That's cool. Just drawing things to a close now, we've got three questions that we ask everyone.
Sure.
The first one, I love asking this, because I've not had the same answer twice. Who is Canada's favorite band or best band?
Oh.
I only ask Canadians this, of course.
Who's Canada's best band?
You've worked with a few big names over the years. I wondered if you had a particular favorite. Canada sort of suffers in the way Australia does, in the fact that there's a few big names out there that everyone knows, and then the rest.
That, you know, I have to say, it's not even a fair question, because if it depends on the genre.
Yeah.
You know? You know, the first song that just popped into my head when you said that would be like Rocket in the Free World, Neil Young.
Neil Young, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think Neil Young is fantastic, but I also think Rush is fantastic.
Yeah.
We
tend to get Neil, Rush, Bachman Turner Overdrive, and Triumph, of course. He worked with Rick, I know, in the past. We'll move quickly on from that one then. If you could have been a fly on the wall for the creation of any great album, just to see how it all came together and how the magic happened in the studio, what would it be for you?
Oh, probably Sgt. Pepper's.
Yeah. You certainly can't go past that one. So much was going on.
No,
there.
You can't. And, you know, the thing that fascinates me about George Martin's production is that so much of this stuff was just done four track and with actual guys in a room playing live in real time, working off each other, and, you know, to get harmony blends and different type of mixes that you had to place people differently around one microphone. And, you know, and these albums, like, they hold up today, they stand up today, and they sound amazing. And, like, nobody does records like that anymore. I would love to be, yeah, a fly on the wall at Abbey Road,
I think surely that, or Pet Sounds, as far as production goes, have got to be two of the best albums ever.
Absolutely. Pet Sounds is a big one, biggie too, for sure.
And to close with, we've got a really easy one. What is the meaning of life?
The meaning of life is to to give and receive joy.
That's a very great and very succinct answer. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to the Rock Pit today, Lee. It's been an absolute pleasure. Everyone should go out and buy Fire and Gasoline, which is out now.
Thanks, Mark. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Love's combustible. You're untrustable. You're gonna rust in the dust with a little boy lost that's destructible. And you don't know, oh, should you stay or go? And let me assist you, slow French kiss you while I step on you with my stiletto. Yeah, like fire and gasoline, I'm making me scream. You're so respectable.